evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to You Heard It Here First, an evening of original radio drama presented by the On the Air Radio Players. Tonight, you will hear the three winning entries in our annual script writing contest, three tales which will be brought to radio life by our cast and sound effects wizards. The first show in our program is a tale of monsters and mayhem. It is set on a faraway planet beneath three full moons. We now present to you The Werewolf and the Yeti, winner of our second prize in the scriptwriting contest and written by Jerry Newman of Murrieta, California. Now don't touch that dial.
The time, 1,000 years in the future. Travel to the distant stars has become almost as commonplace as taking the bus across town in our own time. Many things have changed, but as you will hear, some have not changed. Men still try to escape their destinies to no avail, and they still dismiss local legends in their travels at their own peril. The freighter Prometheus hurtles through the trackless void of space at many times the speed of light. In the ship's lounge, the captain is conversing with his two passengers.
Well, Mr. Pinchot, I understand you're quite the mountain climber.
Oh, yes, Captain. I flatter myself. I've achieved a certain reputation in the field after 20 years. I've climbed all the highest peaks on Earth, of course, as well as Olympus Mons on Mars, which unfortunately turned out to be more of a test of endurance than of skill. You see, it's not so much the height of a mountain as its overall difficulty which is important. And while Everest can be a dangerous summit to climb, it's not really the most challenging technique.
So you're leaving the solar system looking for more of a challenge.
Oh, quite right, Captain. Mount Morrison. It's the highest peak on any inhabited world. It's been climbed a number of times already, of course, but never by way of the south face, which is the route I propose to take. Mountains are like animals. They can smell fear in a climber. Once you let that happen, you're finished. Which is why I always tackle them by way of the most difficult descent.
Speaking of animals, you're not concerned about the Yeti?
The Yeti?
It's a local legend about a large, hairy humanoid beast that supposedly prowls around Mount Morrison.
Oh, I haven't encountered many such legends before, Captain, in the Himalayas.
But the Yeti of the Himalayas is peaceable. The one on Mount Morrison is reputedly quite bloodthirsty.
Well, I guess I'll just have to worry about that when the time comes.
As you wish, Mr. Pinchot. And what about you, Mr. Talbot? What's your opinion about such things? Do you think there may be something to them, or are they just stories cooked up to frighten young children into behaving?
Well, it depends on the story, Captain. Some of them, I'm sure, have some basis in fact. Others, like the Yeti, are no doubt purely fanciful.
A very diplomatic answer. Are you by any chance going to Prokosh 4 as a diplomat?
No.
On business, then?
Again, no. I'm going there to live. Permanently.
To live? But there ain't much there. I've seen dozens of worlds where I'd rather be living myself.
Well, no doubt. But Prokosh 4 does have one redeeming feature which makes it eminently desirable for my particular point of view.
Just what might that be?
Prokosh 4 has no moons, Captain.
No moons?
That's right. It's actually one of the few habitable worlds which doesn't.
Now that you mention it, I suppose that's true. But why would that be so important to you? Do you have something against tides?
Yes, I suppose you could say that. But I didn't realize that Prokosh 4 had any mountains worth climbing, let alone the highest one in the galaxy.
Oh, Mount Morrison isn't on Prokosh 4, Mr. Talbot. It's on Kalinda.
Kalinda? But we're not going to Kalinda, are we, Captain?
I'm afraid we're making a little unscheduled side trip to Kalinda, Mr. Talbot. Mr. Pinchot arranged for it at the last minute, so to speak. We'll only be there for a few days to drop off and take on supplies.
A few days? But I was given to understand there would be no other stops before Prokosh 4.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Talbot. I thought you'd been informed. I'm afraid it's all been arranged, so there's nothing that can be done about it now.
I suppose Kalinda has a moon?
As a matter of fact, it has three moons.
Three. Do you think any of them will be full?
Well, with three moons in the sky, I suppose there's a good chance at least one of them will be full on any given night. But what earthly difference does it make? No pun intended.
Please excuse me, Captain. I'm not feeling very well. I think I'll retire to my cabin for the evening.
Of course, Mr. Talbot. Would you like me to send over the medical officer?
No, that shouldn't be necessary. It's just a touch of space sickness. Good night, Captain. Mr. Pinchot.
Now, what the devil do you suppose that was all about?
Damned if I know, Mr. Pinchot. Damned if I know.
A few days later, the Prometheus makes landfall on Kalinda. Talbot disembarks and hurriedly makes his way down the winding cobblestone streets of the old spaceport town. Before long, he comes to the door of a house.
Yeah, what do you want?
Are you Mr. Zarin?
I am, if it's any business of yours. You're not from around here, are you?
No, I just came in on the ship from Earth.
I thought as much. So why don't you just go right on back there?
Father, is that any way to treat a visitor from Earth? He's traveled millions of miles, and you tell him to go back to his ship? Shame on you.
Now, Selina, this is none of your business. Go on back inside.
Oh, thank you, Selina. I'm glad to see not everybody on this planet is so inhospitable. I was told your father has a stone hut available for rent at the base of the mountains.
I'd
be willing to pay you well if I could have the hut for a few days only, just until the ship's ready to leave.
Well? How well?
Would 1,000 zanders a night be sufficient?
1,000? What did you say your name was?
I didn't, but it's Talbot, Lawrence Talbot.
Well now, Mr. Talbot, what are you standing outside in the cold for? Please, come inside, where we can discuss this matter in comfort. What are you standing there gawping for, girl? Where are your manners? Fetch the gentleman from Earth something to eat.
Oh, please, there's no need to trouble yourself.
Trouble? That's what women are for, Mr. Talbot. Go on now, Selina. Make yourself useful. You've seen off-worlders before, and I dare say you'll see plenty more when our guest is gone. He must be hungry after his walk from the field. Go on now. Leave business to the men.
Yes, Father.
Now, where were we? Ah, yes. I believe you mentioned the sum of 1,000 zanders a night. In advance?
Of course. There is one other thing I'll require, however.
Oh? And just what might that be?
I'll need to have a locksmith install a time lock on the door. At my expense, of course.
A time lock? What on Kalinda for?
I have my reasons.
Well, I don't know. It's a rather unusual request.
Then I'll make it 2,000 a night, Mr. Zarin. I don't have time to dicker.
For that sum, you could have my own house, Mr. Talbot, and I'd sleep in the street. I like a man who knows what he wants and is willing to pay for it.
Good. Then it's settled. I expect to be here for 2 nights only. If it turns out to be longer, I'll write you another check. Take it to any local bank, you'll find they'll be happy to cash it. Now, the sooner we find a locksmith, the better.
But Selina will have dinner ready soon. Surely you'll do us the honor of dining with us. After all, it isn't every day we're fortunate enough to be able to entertain a distinguished visitor from Earth.
Ordinarily, there's nothing I'd like better, Mr. Zarin. Your daughter is most charming, and I'm sure she must be an excellent cook. But at the moment, time really is of the essence.
Very well, if you insist. But you will at least allow Selina to bring you lunch tomorrow.
Yes, of course. I'd be delighted. Now, we really do need to find a locksmith, Zarin. There's no time to waste.
That evening, Pinchot and his party established their base camp further up at the foothill to the massive Mount Morrison. Pinchot is in his tent, talking to his guide, Balin.
We've gotten a good start, Balin, but the real work begins tomorrow. Make sure everyone gets a good night's sleep. They're going to need it once we really get going on the mountain.
Yes, sir, Mr. Pinchot. We'll be ready. Don't you worry about that.
That's what I want to hear. Good night now, and see you bright and early in the morning.
Good night, Mr. Pinchot.
Who's there? Balin?
The next afternoon, Selina and Talbot are sitting together on a blanket in front of the hut, having finished the picnic basket she brought for him.
Selina, I've told you everything about Earth that I know.
Oh, no, you haven't. You're holding out on me. Come on now. You must know more. After all, you've lived there all your life.
Yes.
Didn't you?
All my life.
Well, then, you couldn't possibly have told me all you know. Are the oceans and the mountains really as beautiful as they say?
Yes, they're very beautiful, but no more so than here.
And the women of Earth, what are they like?
Again, Kalinda gives nothing away in that regard either, if you're any indication. But why all this curiosity about Earth? It seems to me you have a very nice world here.
Oh, it's nice enough, I suppose. But so very dull.
There's an old Earth expression, Selina. The grass is always greener. Wait, what's that in the distance?
Where?
Over there, at the base of the mountains, coming this way. Isn't that Pinchot's climbing party? But they established base camp only last night. Why would they be returning so soon?
Oh, there must be something wrong. Oh, my. It looks like Balin is the guide for the party.
Balin?
He's a possessive young man who thinks he has some kind of claim on me. Why, I don't know. I've certainly never given him any encouragement. But he's not going to like seeing me with you.
Hello, Selina.
Hello, Balin. What's happened here? Has someone been killed?
The man from Earth, Pinchot.
Pinchot? But how could this have happened? You hadn't yet started the dangerous part of the ascent.
It wasn't a fall. It was the Yeti, a creature that lives in the mountains. It entered Pinchot's tent last night when he was asleep. It wasn't a very pretty sight this morning when I found him.
The poor man.
So who's your new friend, Selina? Aren't you going to introduce us?
This is Mr. Talbot, Balin. He's from Earth, too.
Is that so? Well, I'd recommend that he be going back to Earth soon, or he might end up like his friend, Pinchot.
Balin, that's a terrible thing to say.
I'm just thinking of his own welfare. It was very pleasant meeting you, Mr. Talbot, but we'd best be pushing on. It's getting late. We don't want your friend's remains getting too ripe now, do we?
You mustn't mind Balin, Lawrence. He fancies he's in love with me. But he doesn't know the meaning of the word. All he really wants is a servant. Like my father.
I'd say it's a little more than that, Selina, if I'm any judge of such things.
Well, even if it is, I don't love him. Lawrence, there's something I must tell you. I love you. I knew it from the moment I saw you. I want to be with you when you leave tomorrow.
You don't know what you're saying, Selina. We hardly know each other.
There. Now do we know each other well enough?
Selina, you don't know what you're saying.
Don't you find me attractive?
Of course I find you attractive. Damnably attractive. That's the problem. Selina, you saw what happened to Pinchot. He was torn to pieces as if by an animal.
Yes, yes. The Yeti.
Selina, listen to me. I killed Pinchot, not your Yeti.
Oh, don't be silly. How could you have done something like that?
Because I'm a werewolf. Every time there's a full moon, I turn into an animal and go looking for someone to kill. That's why I'm going to Prokosh 4, because it has no moons. Why do you think I'm staying here, rather than on the ship or at an inn? And why do you think I had a time lock put on the door, set to lock just before sundown and stay locked until morning?
But then how could you have gotten out of the hut last night? Was the lock broken?
I don't know. It seemed all right this morning when I checked it. But something must have gone wrong.
Oh, but what could have gone wrong? Oh, Balin may be a child, but he knows the mountains. If he says it was the Yeti, you can believe him. It was the Yeti.
Oh, what's the use? I don't blame you for not believing me. You must think I'm crazy.
No. Just very unhappy and lonely. You need someone to share your life with, Lawrence. You need me.
And you'd still want to come with me? Even after what I've told you?
Oh, yes, now more than ever.
Oh, God, if only it were possible. It's been so long since I tried trusting myself with a woman. The last time, she didn't believe me either. Oh, my God, no. The sun, it's going down. The moon's arising. I had no idea it was so late. Selina, you must leave here immediately.
But I can't, Lawrence. It's getting dark. The Yeti.
I'm telling you, there is no Yeti. You have to leave now.
But I'd be safer here with you in the hut. Oh, please, Lawrence, let me stay the night here with you. I'm afraid.
Well, you should be afraid, but staying, not leaving. If I promise to take you with me when the ship leaves tomorrow, will you go back now?
Oh, Lawrence, do you really? it.
Yes, damn it, I really mean it.
I'll meet you at the field tomorrow morning. My father likes to sleep late. The ship will be off before he even realizes I'm gone.
Yes, fine. The field, tomorrow morning. Now go, please, go.
Tomorrow morning, Lawrence.
Tomorrow morning, Selina. Thank God, she's safe now.
Lawrence, let me in!
But you promised, Selina. We'll meet tomorrow. Tomorrow!
Lawrence, it's the Yeti. It's coming this way. If you don't believe me, look out the window.
Good Lord, no. It can't be. Selina, it's locked. I can't open it. Run, darling, run. It's your only chance.
I could never outrun it, dear Lawrence. If I'm going to die anyway, I'd rather spend my last moments here with you.
No, Selina. Run. Run. Run.
As Selina attempts to flee the scene, a piercing howl cuts across the moonlit night. The sound of wood shattering, a telltale sign that the werewolf has gotten free. As the Yeti approaches, the beast catches sight of the ghastly werewolf emerging from the destroyed door of the stone hut. As they lock eyes, there is the briefest moment of hesitation before they charge at one another. The battle rages across the ghostly landscape. Stars are chased, claws slashed, jaws snap. The flashes of crimson stain the pristine snow, and soon it is over. The cold night is silent, save for the whispering of the wind across the snow-covered hills.
Where do you think she could be, Balin? She should have been home hours ago.
She's with the Earthmen, obviously. I could see it in her eyes.
Then at least she's safe.
Safe? I'd rather the Yeti got her.
You don't mean that, Balin.
No, no. Of course not. But either way, we have to go out after her.
But the Yeti, you saw what it did to the other Earthman.
If you're afraid, I'll go myself. I've got my 45. That should be enough to handle anything that walks on 2 feet, human or not.
No, I'll go with you, Balin. Selina's my daughter, my only child.
Good. We'd best be off. We've wasted enough time as it is.
We should be within sight of the hut any moment now.
I see it. There she is, Zarin, standing by the hut. Selina! Thank God you're all right.
He's at peace now, Balin.
What? Who's at peace? Zarin, shine the lamp over there, over by those rocks. Oh, my God! It's the Earthman Talbot and the Yeti.
They practically tore each other apart.
But how? How could he have killed something like this with his bare hands?
And look, over there, the door to the hut. It's been burst through from the inside. 2 inches of solid oak.
The 3 moons must have given him greater strength.
3 moons? What are you talking about? Selina, tell us what happened here.
Leave her be, Balin. She doesn't remember what happened. And I hope to God for her sake she never does. Come, child, it's over now. It's time to go home.
But he's at peace now, Father. Don't you see? He's finally found peace at last.
And so closes The Werewolf and the Yeti by Jerry Newman. We now leave Kalinda far behind and travel back to Earth for a story of ghosts, greed, and real estate. Here now is our first prize-winning script, The House on Bigelow, written by Laurie Fulmer of Richmond, Virginia.
When I want something, I always find a way to get it. If it already belongs to somebody else, I take it, or I buy it, or I woo it away. But I always get it. So when Glenda Baxter walked into my office, I decided I wanted her.
Good morning! Welcome to Reynolds and Reynolds Realtors!
Hi, I need to talk to someone about a house.
Absolutely! Are you selling or looking to buy?
Selling. Definitely selling.
Oh, great. Melissa's at a showing right now, but Bobby would love to talk to you. Have a seat and I'll let him know you're here.
She was beautiful, broken, needed to sell her dream house in the burbs just to move on from a miserable 4-year marriage. Her ex was a bum that never knew how to treat her. And I was just what the doctor ordered. You're at the right place, Mrs.
You can call me Glinda.
Glinda, well, that's a name you don't hear too often.
It was my grandmother's. I hated it when I grew up, but now I kind of like it.
Well, I like it too. It's beautiful. It suits you. Listing Glinda's house was all I needed to get the ball rolling. The next day, I took the contract over to her house to sign. She desperately wanted to sell, and I desperately wanted her. All right, only one more place for you to sign, right here.
Well, I never knew there was so much to selling a house.
Well, that's what I'm here for. You don't need to worry about a thing.
Why, I can't thank you enough, Bobby.
And anytime you need me. If you have any questions, if you have a mouse in the house, you just give me a call. And to celebrate...
Oh, my goodness. Champagne.
And so here's to new beginnings.
I'll drink to that.
It was just that easy. At first, I would call every day just to check in. Then I started dropping by her house. It wasn't long before my afternoon client meetings turned into the highlight of my day.
I must say, Mr. Reynolds, you certainly do go above and beyond the call.
All in the line of duty, ma'am.
And now I know why you won Realtor of the Year.
Yep, it's true. I've been the top-selling realtor in this city for 5 straight years. And to be fair, some of that is due to my partner, Melissa. The other Reynolds. I give credit where it's due. We make an unstoppable selling machine, she and I. Melissa's one of those things I had to have many years ago. So I married her. But now that I had Glinda, I just didn't want her anymore.
Oh, good morning, Melissa.
Morning, Val. Any calls?
Mrs. Dunlap confirming you're 10 o'clock this morning at her house on Bigelow.
Right. Did you get me the history?
Here you go. Oh, didn't know that place was so old.
It's old, all right. Probably falling down as we speak.
Oh, it's got historic status, though, right?
Oh, please. It's a historic pile of crap. But hopefully some gullible young couple will come in and see their future dream house. Camera ready?
All set.
Thanks, Val.
I hate these old heaps myself, but this house was on Bigelow Street, or Mansion Row, as we called it here in town. For some reason, people love these old places for their character. The seller was this nice old lady who just didn't have a clue.
And through here is the kitchen. I know, it's a nightmare.
No. It can all be gutted and updated.
It's been empty since my Aunt Cora died about 6 months ago. She lived here her whole life, so there was a lot to clear out.
Well, let's head upstairs. Ah, good-sized bedrooms.
Is this the access to the third floor?
Yes, that's the attic.
Is it locked?
We had to store some furniture up there.
Oh, that's all right. We'll still take a look.
It's so hot and dusty.
Well, I need to take a few measurements.
You do have the key?
Yes, but... All right, I'll go get it. We keep it in a drawer in the kitchen.
Okay, that was weird.
This is gonna have to be a fire sale.
No decent systems.
The floors are a mess. That kitchen.
Oh my God, I think the oven still had some dead pot roast in it or something. Shh.
Here we go. It's one of those older church key things. Wait a minute now. The light. There's no switch. It's on a chain. Here it is. There we go. Well, don't say I didn't warn you.
Believe me, nothing surprises us anymore.
Wow, you do have a lot of stuff up here.
We had nowhere else to go with it.
To be honest, this could really be a great space.
Absolutely. People love to turn attics into kids' rooms.
Oh my God, somebody would really want to use this to live in?
Of course. Here, Bobby, can you take a few shots?
The thing is, I was really hoping we could keep this space off limits.
You mean to buyers?
With all this stuff up here.
Oh, it'll be fine.
But isn't the floor unsafe?
Seems solid to me.
You know, I think I need to tell you something.
Okay.
If I didn't, I would feel like I was being dishonest or fraudulent or something.
What is it?
The thing is, there's kind of a family legend. Something happened up in this attic a long time ago.
What was it?
Well, my great-aunts Cora and Rosalind were a couple of spinsters that lived in this house their entire lives until when Rosalind was about 40, she met a man.
Ah.
The story goes that Rosalind and this fella were going to elope and move to Buffalo, which Cora wasn't too happy about.
Right.
She was terrified of being alone, so she convinced Rosalind that it would never last with this man, that he was just a shyster looking for a quick buck.
So the sisters had some money?
At the time, they were loaded, and Cora convinced Rosalind that she was making a huge mistake. So on the day her suitor, or whatever you want to call him, came to get her, Rosalind locked herself up here in the attic. Cora answered the door, told the fellow that Rosalind had changed her mind and that she never wanted to see him again.
And he just took off? Didn't put up a fight?
Apparently, he just walked away. Then when Cora came up to get Rosalind, after the man was long gone, Cora found her, hanging from that rafter.
Oh my God!
That's awful!
She used an old pair of her father's trousers that were in a chest up here.
Oh, that's so creepy.
Of course, Cora called my grandmother right away and asked her to come over. My mother was just a young girl at the time, so she tagged along.
Ooh, yikes.
They wouldn't let her come up to the attic to see Rosalind. But after they got her down, Mom snuck up and saw the pants hanging. Right here. And then later, my mom came back and did this. Come behind here. Watch your head.
What is that?
It's hard to see now, but run your hand over it.
Something's... what? Carved in the wood.
What does it say?
Aunt Rosie, R.I.P.
Sorry, it's the office. Hey, can you hold for a minute? I'm sorry, ladies, I do need to get this.
That's fine.
You two head down and I'll stay here and get some measurements.
All right, we'll meet you down in the cellar.
And whatever you do, don't turn the light off on me. Hey, I'm at the weirdest house ever. It's this creepy old mansion on Bigelow.
Bobby?
And here's the best part. Some old lady apparently killed herself up here in the attic.
Bobby, I need to talk to you. Where can we meet?
Look, I can't, Glenda. I've got to finish up here.
Okay, then right after.
Okay. I'll pick up lunch and I'll bring it over to your place.
No, I don't want you to come here.
Why not?
Can you meet me in an hour at the coffee shop?
What's going on?
We'll talk later. And please, don't be late.
Yeah, okay. See you in an hour, then. Hey, Rosie, you dried up old biddy. Can you give me a hand with this? Guess not. Poor Aunt Rosie. Man, your sister must have been one nasty old witch.
Bobby!
Coming! Gotta go, Rosie. You know how the beast is when she gets hungry.
There you are. I was afraid Rosalind locked you in.
Oh my God.
Oh, good heavens.
Oh, sorry. I must not have shut the door.
Why did it do that?
Did you open a window?
No, of course not. So, Dorothy, we'll put all this together and we'll have a contract for you to sign tomorrow.
Sounds great.
Historic properties are really hot right now. You got nothing to worry about.
what a dump.
Not the worst we've seen.
It needs $100,000 just to make it livable. And that attic, it's practically haunted.
Well, get it up. We'll get it set up for an open house. What's the next available Sunday?
I'm booked till the 5th.
And I've got Glenda Baxter's property on the 5th. So you're going to have to handle that haunted house.
Oh, God, do I have to?
Come on, it won't be so bad. You and Rosie can get to know each other.
Oh, shut up.
I dropped Melissa off at the office and headed over to meet Glenda. It's very convenient to have your lover also be your most needy client.
Well, thanks for coming, Bobby.
What's with the handshake?
Shh! That lady in the corner knows me. Don't look now.
Okay, okay, what?
I got you a latte.
Ah, thanks.
Bobby.
You look incredible.
Please don't. I need to tell you something, and I need you to listen.
Okay, tell me.
As soon as my house sells, I'm moving back to Chicago.
What?
Listen to me.
Glenda, stop it!
Keep your voice down, and don't try to change my mind.
You're not going anywhere.
I knew you would do this.
You've been talking to your sister again, haven't you?
No, Bobby. I've just come to the realization that you really don't want to leave your wife.
Come on, sweetie, don't be like this.
So, I want to drop the price of the house.
Where are you? What are you? Now listen to me. It won't be much longer, I swear to you.
You've been saying that for 6 months. Don't touch me. She's looking over here. I want to sell my house and move on.
Well, what about what I want?
Exactly.
Okay, Glenn, I get it. I really do. You don't have to threaten me.
It's not a threat. I've committed to my sister.
I knew it.
And I'm moving in with her. We'll split the rent on our new apartment.
You're not going anywhere. Do you understand me? I will do whatever it takes, okay?
Let's talk about the house, Bobby. I want to lower the price and get this house sold. Or do I need to talk to Melissa about it?
So my lovely Glenda was finally showing her teeth. I think in some odd way it made me want her even more. But what to do about my wife? I wouldn't make as much money without her. But I sure as hell didn't want to make her my competitor.
Reynolds and Reynolds Realty, this is Melissa. Yes, the property on Bigelow is on the market. We have an open house on the 5th from 2 to 4.
If I wanted Glenda in my life, then there wasn't room for Melissa anymore. And like I said, I wanted Glenda.
Big white house, you can't miss it.
So I played along with Glenda, lowered the price, and pushed her a house like it was the Taj Mahal. She was impressed, thought I was taking it so well. And as for Melissa, that was the easiest part, really. I had made lots of friends over the years. And one of those friends had a friend in Pittsburgh called Mr. Smith. All right, follow me and don't touch anything.
I'm not touching nothing. Man, this joint is massive.
Now, make sure you ask to see the ad. Yeah, this door should be locked.
Your wife's guts the key?
Yeah, and here's the light. Now remember, it's got to look like a suicide.
No problem.
Use one of these sheets.
Nice touch.
Right here. This is where it has to happen.
Yeah, it looks good and sturdy. Yeah, that'll work.
Oh, it works. Believe me, it works.
Reynolds and Reynolds, this is Valerie. Yes, the address is 618 Bigelow. Open today from 2 to 4. Oh, you're so welcome. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, flyers ready for the house on Bigelow?
Ah, here you go. Now, Bobby said it's got potential.
Then Bobby should be there selling it.
Well, he's doing Glenda Baxter's property today, isn't he?
Yeah, I begged him to switch with me, but he wouldn't budge. And I have so much to do. Anyway, thanks for these.
Everything fell into place, just like I planned. And when a great offer on Glenda's house came in, well, that was just the perfect touch. So while Melissa was busy selling the haunted house, I would be selling my darling Glenda the idea of spending the rest of her life with me. Glenda, will you stop looking around like you're guilty of something?
That's because I am guilty of something.
No, you're not. You're my client, and we're having a business meeting.
And why aren't you handling the open house today?
Because we don't need to have an open house. This is actually a celebration lunch.
I thought you said it was a business meeting.
Okay, then. We're having a business meeting to discuss the recent offer on your property.
Oh, my God. That is good news. How much? Is it good?
Patience, my dear. Patience.
Hey, Melissa, you got a minute?
What's up?
I know I've never handled an open house before on my own.
Not yet.
And since you really don't want to go today...
Aren't you on phone duty?
Well, yeah, but if you could answer the phones, then I could do the showing.
I don't know.
Oh, come on, Melissa, it's perfect. Think about it. You stay here and get stuff done, and I get the experience and maybe even sell my first house.
Believe me, if you sell that dump today, I'll make you a partner in this firm.
Oh, my God, are you serious?
Of course not. But what that would be one hell of a sale, young lady.
So that means yes, right?
It means maybe.
Oh, thank you.
Valerie.
I'm so excited. My first open house. Tell me everything I need to know.
Do I have a choice?
I'm sorry. I'm just so...
Excited, yes, I know. Well, it's already 1 o'clock. Oh, what the hell. Have a seat. I'll fill you in.
Hello.
Oh, please come in. I am Valerie with Reynolds and Reynolds.
I'm Amy. This is my husband, Scott.
Oh, nice to meet you.
Whoa, that's quite a staircase.
Isn't it something? And it's still in good shape. Oh, welcome. Oh, come on in. Oh, and who is this?
This is Anna.
Oh, she's beautiful. And how old is she?
She's 6 months.
And absolutely gorgeous. Don't you think this would be a great house to grow up in, Anna?
Plenty of room, that's for sure.
Well, take a good look around and let me know if you have any questions.
So, Miss Baxter, I've invited you here today to tell you that we have had a very respectable offer on your house. And as your agent, I advise you to accept.
So, how much?
98% of the asking price.
Great!
So, Glenda, my darling, a toast. Here's to selling your home for a great price.
Here, here.
And here's to us.
That I won't drink to.
Oh, come on.
There is no us.
Glenda.
Bobby, stop it, please. You sold my house, and I'm grateful. I really am. But it's done. I'm moving back to Chicago.
Look, I need to tell you.
Tell me about the offer.
It's good, it's good. Like I said, I think we should take it.
Well, of course we're going to take it.
But, sweetheart, we have more to celebrate than just the sale of your house. I did it.
You did what?
I talked to Melissa. I told her.
Oh, my God. About us?
About everything.
Oh, I can't believe it.
So, what did you think?
It needs a lot of work.
Did you get a flyer? Oh, excuse me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for stopping by. Bye, Anna! Hey, Melissa.
How's it going?
It's going fine.
Good turnout?
Pretty good. Not too busy.
Anybody want to see the attic?
Well, not yet.
Did you find the key?
Yep, right in the drawer.
Well, hopefully you won't need it.
What was that?
What was that?
I don't know. Some kind of... somebody must still be upstairs. I'll check it out. Oops! Oh, gotta go! Somebody else just walked in!
Wait, Val, call me back, okay?
Okay. Hi! Come on in!
Valerie, Val... There's something I need to tell you.
Well, it's true. I told her I was in love with someone else and that I wanted a divorce.
I can't believe it. Did she know it was me? What did she say?
She said, well, look, I'm not going to lie. She didn't take it very well.
Well, of course she didn't take it very well.
She didn't say much, really. She didn't yell and scream, which is what I expected.
I'm in shock.
Yeah, I think she was too. To tell you the truth, I'm actually kind of worried about what she might do.
Well, thanks so much for stopping by.
Sorry if I held you up.
Oh, no, not at all.
I'd love to have my husband see it. How much longer will you be here?
Well, I'm closing up now, but my number's on the card. Just give me a call and we can set something up.
Sounds great. Bye now.
Bye. Thanks again. Hello? Hello? Is anybody up there? Hello? Is anybody here? That is so weird. Nobody could have gotten into the attic. Still locked. Hello? Okay, where's the light switch? They gotta have... Oh, my God! Oh, it's a chain, you idiot. Hello? Anybody? Oh, wow. Look at all this stuff. Ah, really dusty. Oh, man, cool old rocker. This must be 100 years old.
Get out.
Oh, my God. Okay, who is that? This isn't funny. Who is up here?
Get out.
Where are you?
Get out.
Hello. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's just... The showing is over and I need to go.
I know it's late. I just want a quick look around.
No, I'm sorry. I can't. It's
But it'll only take a minute.
I really can't stay now. What are you... I told you I have to.
Don't answer that.
Who are you? No, don't touch me.
Give me that phone.
Please.
Do you feel this knife?
Oh, my God.
Come on, Val. Where are you?
Shh. It's all right. Let's make this easy now.
Please don't hurt me.
Well, that's entirely up to you.
Okay.
It's very, very sharp. So please listen to me very carefully.
Yeah. Whatever you want.
Valerie, pick up.
Let's, take a little tour upstairs, shall we? I just love these old houses.
So now, can we have that toast? I promise you, Glenda, darling, Melissa will never come between us again.
Pick up, Bobby. Damn it, pick up!
What the hell? What time is it? Oh, my God! This is Bobby.
Where are you?
I'm just finishing up with Mrs. Baxter. Where are you?
At the office.
At the office? Why aren't you at the open house?
Valerie covered it for me.
What?
What? What's wrong?
What do you mean Valerie's at the house?
Yeah, and I'm worried.
Oh, my God.
I told her to call me back, and I haven't heard from her.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No.
Bobby,
no.
Bobby, what is it?
Why? What's wrong?
I gotta go.
Bobby.
Bobby, what's going on?
I gotta go.
Excellent. You already have it open for us. Go.
No, please.
Nagman, my name is Ricky. What is your emergency?
I need help.
What exactly is the nature of your problem?
I don't know exactly.
Ah, perfect. Sit.
I'll do anything you want. Please, just don't hurt.
Sit!
I think someone's in trouble.
Oh, tell me, please, who's in trouble and what is the location, madam?
Put your hands together. That's a good girl.
Oh, my God, she's all alone and she may need help.
Yes, madam, I'm understanding you, but by goodness gracious, you need to calm yourself down and tell me, please, where is she right now? The location, what is the address?
Please, please, don't hurt me.
It's on Bigelow. 618, I think. The big white house on the corner of Bigelow and Main.
Now your feet.
No, please.
Put them together.
Yes, that's it. 618. Please hurry.
Hey. What the hell? Who's up here? What? Ah! Who's up here? Oh, great.
Get out.
What the hell is going on, Bobby?
Where are you?
Get out!
I'm in the attic. Where do you think?
You gotta get out of there. She's not my wife. Did you hear me, Smith? Get out of there!
What the hell is this place? Oh, no, damn it. Damn it!
What?
It's stuck. It won't open.
You gotta get out of there.
I can't. It won't. Oh, come on, you son of a...
What the hell is that? Smith, get out of here!
I can't. It won't.
Poor Mr. Smith. When the police let him out, he was so petrified he couldn't start spilling the beans fast enough. Glenda hightailed it to Chicago. And Melissa and Valerie, well, let's just say their agency is doing just fine now, specializing in old houses that come with a lot of history. As for me, I'm passing my time in this federal spa by writing a book, and I got a long time to get it right. I'm calling it Aunt Rosie, R.I.P.
That was The House on Bigelow by Laurie Folmer, winner of our first prize in the 2013 On the Air Radio Players Scriptwriting Contest. And before we leave you tonight, we present a tribute to a classic from the golden age of radio, a story that will warm your heart as it tingles your spine. Here now is The War of the Worms, an excerpt from Tales of the Nether Regions, our third prize-winning script, written by Dan Fiorella of New Jersey.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Tales of the Nether Regions. Tonight, we bring you a truly classic bit of suspense. Everyone knows about Orson Welles' famous 1938 radio broadcast of War of the Worlds. That live Halloween show of the classic sci-fi novel caused a nationwide panic when listeners thought that the Earth was actually being invaded by Martians. What few people know is that Orson Welles had tried a similar stunt the previous Halloween. We've located the only known recording of that show, and this is the first time it's been heard since October 31st, 1937. Ladies and gentlemen, Orson Welles' War of the Worms.
Yowza, yowza. Welcome to the Radio Ballroom featuring Harry Wolfman's All Chimp Orchestra. Coming to you live from the Champagne Lounge high atop the Dingler Building. Tonight, Harry welcomes Kalinda and the Three Moons. Jack Mooney and his radio players. And the astounding Lombard, radio magician. And now here's Harry Wolfman asking the musical question, Moonlight Becomes You?
Moonlight becomes you. It goes with your hair. You certainly chose the right things to wear. Moonlight becomes you. I'm thrilled at the sight, and I could get so romantic tonight.
We interrupt Radio Ballroom for this news bulletin. This is Theodore Wentley of WKRX News. Heavy rains have hit our area. Very heavy rains. It's raining very hard. More on this story as it develops. We now return you to Radio Ballroom.
You're all dressed up to go dreaming. Now don't tell me I'm wrong. And what a night to go dreaming. Mind if I tag along?
This just in. Apparently the heavy rains are causing worms to crawl out of the ground. A lot of worms. More worms than you could possibly imagine. More about this as it comes in. We return you now to your musical interlude.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home.
This is Theodore Wentley with this special news bulletin. We are bringing you the latest news about the worm situation. We go now live to New Jersey, where Mary Mae McKay is on the scene.
Yes, Theodore, I'm here outside the Grover Mill Worm Farm, where I'm watching an amazing number of worms crawl up out of the ground. It's a huge, writhing mass of ululating invertebrates, a slithering, shining, mucusy mountain of phylum Annelida. They seem to be moving this way with surprising speed. Yes. They are definitely headed this way. Look at that. They're just a few yards from us, gaining speed. A tidal wave of, oh my God!
Mary? Mary? Well, that was Mary Mae McKay from New Jersey. Apparently we've lost our line to her. I'm sure it's due to some technical difficulty and not a murderous horde of wet earthworms. More on this story as it develops. We now return you to your musical interlude.
Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home.
We interrupt this program for this update on the worm invasion. We go now live to Carlton Jameson somewhere near the Lincoln Tunnel.
Yes, Theodore. I'm atop our broadcast truck outside the Jersey entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel, and I'm watching what can only be described as a river of worms inching their way to the tunnel, drawn as if by some primeval force. They are crushing cars and buses, carrying the mangled frames along with them like floodwaters. The army is attempting to stop them.
Men, fire!
No, bullets don't harm them. They're bringing out the rocket launchers. No, the rockets are useless. One soldier is running up and he's pulled out his army knife. He's attempting to cut the worms in half. No, forget that. Now the halves are chasing him.
Citizens of New York City, please evacuate the city. The worms are coming. I repeat, the worms are coming.
New York City is being evacuated even as we speak. People are fleeing into Long Island, into the heart of potato country. But we have reports of massive rains chasing thousands of worms up from the rich soil of Suffolk and Nassau counties. And they, too, are approaching New York City from the east. Oh, the humanity!
Carlton? Carlton, are you there? It seems we're having more of those technical difficulties. We'll return you to Cher, Run Stuntman, for the time being.
You made me cry for. I didn't want to tell ya, I didn't want to tell ya. I want some love, that's true. Yes, I do, indeed you do, you know I do. Give me what I cry for. You know you've got the kind of kisses that I die for. You know you made me. You know you made me. You know you made me love you.
This is Theodore Wentley again from the WKRX newsroom. The worms have entered Midtown, wreaking havoc and destruction. Central Park is a sea of worms. Trees and foliage are simply disappearing. Oh my, oh my. The Chrysler Building is gone. I repeat, the Chrysler Building is gone. Mankind seems helpless against this slimy, segmented onslaught. There are further reports of worm herds in Oswego, Tenafly, Trenton, and many cities in the listening area. All branches of the military say they are powerless to halt the invasion. We now return you to... Hello? One moment, listeners. I'm being told we have on the line a Dr. Victoria Van Henderson, the noted worm expert from the New York City Worm Institute. Dr. Van Henderson, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here. It's the music. The worms are coming for the music. Stop cutting back to the music.
Really? It's the music that's attracting them?
Yes, so don't cut back to the champagne lounge.
This is an interesting development. We will be informing the authorities and await their response. While we're waiting, let's go back to the Harry Wolfman Orchestra.
No, you idiot, don't!
Oh, right. So I guess we won't.
Once the music was halted, the worms began to dissipate, burrowing back into the earth from whence they came. Except for a couple that got caught by some fishermen who needed bait. But soon nature returned to her balance, and mankind was able to rebuild, but never to forget this terrible war of the worms.
Blow, little blow, and turn the key on. You are equipped with taillight neon. You've got a cute vest pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're out to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Glow, little glowworm, glow. Glow, little glowworm, glow. Glow, little glowworm, glow. Glow, little glowworm, glow!
Really? That was it? I remember it being scarier. Oh well, let's just end this here then. So thanks for joining us tonight, and remember to tune in next time for the tales of the macabre and the horrid and frightfully odd on Tales from the Nether Regions.
The Werewolf and the Yeti was written by Jerry Newman. The House on Bigelow was written by Lori Fulmer. And The War of the Worms, an excerpt from Tales of the Nether Regions, was written by Dan Fiorella. This has been a production of the On the Air Radio Players and is sponsored by the Henrico County Division of Recreation and Parks. The voices and sound effects artists for tonight's show are Sandra Clayton, Jana Francis Fisher, Dan Gerstenlauer, Steve Graham, Corey Hull, Dale Leopold, Chris Lifko, James Nygren, Hannah Pulaski, Don Pulaski, Andrea Zimmerman, and myself, Brenda Moore. Sound booth operator and technical editor was Devin Langston. The production manager was Karen Charlotte, and the show was directed by Jack Mooney. Music was provided by Buddy Bishop. Be sure and join us in November here at the Cultural Arts Center in Glen Allen for our next show, Christmas All Over the Dial. For more information about this and all upcoming shows and auditions, visit our website at www.otarp.com. This is your announcer, Brenda Moore, saying good night and happy listening.